Well, hello, superstars, and welcome back to another episode of Word Up with Danny Katz. Today, I am joined by me. I'm solo podcasting. This is my first official solo podcast of the fake Gregorian year called 2025. As you can hear from my voice, there is some congestionings. Cancel, clear, delete. I am moving through some congestion. I am in the process of relinquishing some congestion because I am recovering from being sick. I had the thought to skip it today, and then I thought, no, like let's stay on track, let's stay on schedule. We're big girls, we're big boys. We can handle a little bit of stuffiness in the sinus region. Before we dive into today's podcast, I am reminding you to click that subscribe button, to like, to share, to comment. As you're inspired, send it to a friend or two. It's a great way for us to grow our tribe. The more, the merriest. I am going to be talking primarily today. It's going to be a lot of cultural critiquing, a lot of it informed by some podcast de guest stints that I recently did. I know there are some people who are newer to my tribe and my podcast and who don't know me as the journalist that I started off as. I'm hearing myself saying that, and I'm thinking of the Law of Mankind teachings wherein we are invited to relinquish labels. So let me try that again. I know where there are some people who are newer to my tribe and my podcast who don't know me from my days wherein I was writing and reporting for various journalistic outlets. And I think sometimes those people get confused because they want me, of their own well-intended volition, to speak only about languaging. Alas, I am way more multidimensional than that. And the beauty of this being my podcast is I get to do whatever I want. So while I respect people's well-intended recommendations for me to run my show the way they want me to run my show, I'm gonna do it the way I want to do it. So if you happen to be one of those people who doesn't dig hearing me talk about propaganda and social engineering, respect, this might not be one of your favorite podcasts. I liken it to Joe Rogan's podcast, which despite, him being thoroughly controlled and an absolute bad actor, is definitely an inspiration, I think, for a lot of us who are doing this now. I just realized I sipped from my branded cup, totally covering the branding. Whew, still learning, guys. Let's try that sip again. But Joe Rogan on his podcast, he talks to whoever he wants, and a lot of times he'll talk to MMA people or he'll talk about MMA. And I think that's boring, but it would never occur to me to reach out to Joe Rogan and say, hey, you're doing your podcast wrong. You need to focus only on the topics that I like, and everything else, it's time for you to throw away. So, as I said, today's going to be primarily around social engineering and propaganda, though I will touch into some languaging pieces at some point. We're just gonna move around the space. So, as I said, inspired by some podcasts that I was recently on. One was interesting. So this was a I did a live show on the Baseline. So Jeremiah had me on his podcast, and there were two specific things that came up that I want to go through with us. And one was the idea that movements are op, because it was very challenging for him to wrap his mind around the fact that I don't identify as part of the health freedom movement on any level whatsoever. And that's not just because a lot of those people have turned and are shilling and or pawning for the dark side and have also threatened my life, but mostly it has to do with the fact that movements are ops and I want nothing to do with movements in general. So I want to break this down just to help us understand the landscape and remain sovereign. So I see this whole push towards activism as a huge part of the globalist agenda, right? We see it coming through the Common Core curriculum. We see it coming through the climate fraud narrative and the way that that's being taught slash indoctrinated upon children in schools. All of it is intended to turn children into activists, right? To get them like hyped up on these political or social movements, which only serve to foment division, distraction, wheel spinning, tail chasing, and a beautiful means to control the populace. So, first of all, politics, I agree with this. I saw this a clip of an interview of Gavin Newsom, one of the destroyers of my beloved California. But I saw him interviewing some like slutty rap star, like one of those women who are like always like shaking their junk and promoting the demoralization and degradation of their bodies. Thank you, Tavistock, social engineering project. But she said something that was actually smart in that interview, which is politics should be boring. Like politics should not be this blood sport, this fashionable trend that they've become. And I realize this in light of, you know, Anna Wintour being given one of the presidential freedom honors that were just bestowed last week, which was such a joke because other recipients included George Soros, Hillary Clinton, like these amazing freedom fighters, right? But you look at what happened to Vogue throughout the years, and I did work for the West Coast Vogue editor for a couple years, how it's just become yet another rag for political propaganda, right? And obviously that's why Anna Wintour was given that award. But you look at Vogue, which used to be about like fashion and other fluffy things, fashion jewels, high society, like the same old dross that, you know, is used to distract us. But then it became a forum for political propaganda, obviously very much by design. So it's like by making politics blood sport and theater and trendy, it's a great way to capture the public's attention and then to corrupt and indoctrinate them around political ideas, which is so, so dangerous because I just don't, I was about to say politics shouldn't be fashion, but I'm not gonna should the world, right? But it's not healthy for a populace, for politics to become so fashionable in the way that they have, because it's shallow optics, right? I'm thinking of like the El Rey, you know, this hipster hotel in Santa Fe flying the Ukrainian flag for 2 years. It's like, okay, tell me you know nothing about global politics without telling me you know nothing about global politics. Why are you choosing to fly this flag in Santa Fe, New Mexico? And what do you know about the history of Ukraine, about the history of Khazaria and its ongoing fights with Russia? Like, what do you know about the whole neo-Nazi situation there? What do you know about Burisma and why the United States is actually funding this Ukraine war, which has nothing to do with like liberating the people or protecting them, right? It's like, it's so clear these people don't understand. To this end, I took a walk through the plaza in downtown Santa Fe on New Year's Day. And there was this young woman, she couldn't be more than like 18, 19. She was painted half blue, half yellow, like the Khazarian flag, I mean the Ukraine flag. And she was all smiley and I don't even know what the hell she was doing in terms of her protest, but it was clear that like, she's jumping on a trend that she knows nothing about. And that really didn't matter when the trend was like punk rock or being a goth or wearing like lots of rubber bracelets and lingerie and pretending we're Madonna. But it's quite a different thing when we're, you know, speaking up for, you know, these global conflicts wherein an entire generation of young men has been decimated and we don't know anything. Like it's totally different. It's that they've made politics a trend versus like pink tights and Doc Martens and Betsy Johnson dresses or whatnot. And yes, it's all about retro callbacks today, and I'm fine with it because happen to be wearing vintage Agnes B today. If anyone remembers Agnes B and this like super classic iconic sweater that I was thrilled to find in a vintage shop, that's the theme for today. Roll with it or not, you have free will. So I never jumped on the health freedom movement because health freedom is not a movement. It's not a trend. It's not something to be fought for. It is a God-given right that is not like it's completely erroneous and offensive to even question my right to my health freedom. So to make a no-duh God-given right a movement is to lend the impression that it is not a God-given right. It lends the impression that someone else may actually have a right to lay claim to it, right? It weakens the stance. It's like, I'm not a free speech activist. Freedom of speech is a no-duh God-given right. It's not up for question. So I'm not going to make a movement out of it because making a movement out of a no-duh God-given right is to create this like seemingly oppositional, a controversial scenario where there isn't one. It's like Black Lives Matter. It's how freaking stupid Black Lives Matter was and how we knew it was a psyop from the get-go. It's like, of course, Black Lives Matter because every life matters, but when you separate one specific color or race out from the multitude that exist in human lives, then it calls that life into question, right? I'll take it. Let's take it out of the realm of identity, just so that everyone can hear me, lest some of us are running this mind control. Though if you're listening to my show, I'm guessing that you're not, and we're in the clear. But let's say if all of a sudden I start a movement called Butterflies Matter. Right? And all of a sudden, I'm fighting for butterfly rights and I'm fighting for the lives of butterflies. And this is my whole movement, right? What it's going to do, it's going to take what was always a no duh and all of a sudden call it into question, right? When I say butterflies matter, and I'm fighting for butterflies mattering, and this is the most important issue. And you need to put a butterfly up as your profile picture, or you're against butterflies matter movement. When I throw that out there, here's what it does to the subconscious mind. It calls into question, wait, butterflies are controversial? Wait, who doesn't like butterflies? Who's saying butterflies don't matter? And why don't butterflies matter? And what is the controversy about butterflies, right? Like all of those doubts become embedded in the butterfly paradigm when I put forth the ridiculous notion that butterflies matter, right? And make a point of like at every step of the way, reminding you how much butterflies matter. It makes it seem like there's some controversy in the natural realm around butterflies when there isn't and there shouldn't be. And I'm just gonna use should. I'm gonna speak freely because all this social engineering is dumb and it's annoying me, which is why I'm speaking to it. So this is why I don't jump on the health freedom movement because the freedom of my bodily autonomy is not in question. It's not something that I'm going to fight for. It's not something I'm going to even discuss or entertain any allegations to the contrary because they're so ridiculous that I'm not going to dignify them with a fight or a movement. This is the problem with movements. And pause. Well, let's pause for Brandon sip. This is where this activist class, these people who have, for the most part, unwittingly been caught up in these movements, aren't understanding that they're working against themselves, by fighting for things that it's no one's right to lay claim to on any level. So that's why from the get-go, I was like, I'm not part of any movement. I don't want anything to do with these movements, especially at this stage of the game. Like, it's 2025. Like, why are we even discussing this? It's a done deal. And we also see movements and activism being a huge part of this Maoist neo-Marxist takeover that we see coming through, or attempted takeover coming through, the quote-unquote education system, right? Common Core curriculum, Rockefeller indoctrination passing as education. It's one of the biggest problems is how it's indoctrinating children instead of teaching them, critical thinking, logic, math, grammar. It's training them to become activists. And this is being stated outright, right? This is one of the primary things in terms of like education around climate fraud. It's to indoctrinate a generation of young activists who are going to grow up fighting, basically for the globalist one world agenda, but because they haven't been taught how to think critically, and in fact, those mechanisms being deliberately shut down by way of Common Core curriculum. It's all part of this like Marxist, tyrannical, techno-fascist one world government takeover. It's the huge problem that we're seeing in, I mean, is it even journalism anymore? I don't even know what to think of it. But you look at the people who are leading the sort of alt media conversations, right? They're activists. What's the problem with activism? Activism has an agenda, right? Journalism, for talking about real deal journalism, not the current bastardization, which doesn't look anything like journalism. There's no agenda except for truth, right? There's not a goal to like get people to jump onto your belief structure. That's not journalism at all. But you look at, hang on. You look at the Plandemic series, and I say this as someone who wrote Plandemic 2, but I did one. I did one movie, and then I was out, and I didn't want anything to do with three. And I'm like, I'm not part of this movement. I wanted to bring light to a massive injustice. I did my best. I feel like my best parts of that script ended up on the cutting room floor or in the, trash of the computer, but whatever, this is what happens when we're a writer for hire. But you look at that series, it's being headed by a self-proclaimed activist, right? Who has an agenda, which is muddy when we're talking about truth-telling. I don't want any part of any movement. I just want truth and freedom and justice. And that though none of those things are like trends. And this is the problem with politics becoming so trendy is that, back in the day, kids were into music, fashion, art, Bauhaus, cubism. There was the lowbrow art movement, right? These are cultural movements that have more to do with aesthetics and expression. And so I think it's super dangerous that politics has now been lumped into this category of trend and fashion and like why things are so lame now. So I wish we could get back to the kids and the youth being into music and fashion and art and just leave politics for the boring like mediocre C student class of civil servants. I feel like that would be more helpful, but I wanted to speak to that part because it was very confusing on this podcast for, the host and his live audience that I wasn't down with movements and just looking at the implications of fighting for things that no other people have, or especially governments or institutions have a right to lay claim for. Now, the other thing that came up, so I ended up doing a Twitter Spaces with Jeremiah after we did that podcast, and what was supposed to be a conversation about the word anti and how, just like these movements, stapling the word anti to anything that we allege not to like is only going to strengthen and empower the thing that we're claiming not to like. It devolved into this like Israel-Palestine, like, I don't know, dumpster fire. But what I noticed in that conversation was how freely and easily people felt the need to demonize Jews and like y just use the phrase the Jews, the Jews, the Jews, as though the Jews were the problem. And part of me appreciated like, wow, I love that they have no issue like ripping on Jews and scapegoating Jews in a Twitter space co-hosted by a Jew. But it's odd to me that in 2025, people are still making this conflation. So I'm just inviting us to be a little bit more exacting in our language, that Zionists are not Jews. And in fact, the people who founded the Zionist movement were the Masons. Were the Balfours, were this group of Masons back in what, 1500s, 1600s? I talked about it with Joe Atwell on my Masonic Zionism episode, so I definitely recommend cluing into that. But Zionists and Jews are not the same thing, and it's really dangerous to conflate them. And I'm just, this is something I've gotten used to in the conspiracy community over the past however many decades. It is a massively anti-Semitic community. I personally don't get offended around it. Like, hey, I'm gonna defend anyone's right to be a bigot. Like, that's fine. If you want to hate entire groups of people, that's your God-given right. It doesn't have me wanting to cozy up to you, to hang out with you, to go for a hike with you. It's fairly off-putting and dehumanizing and damaging to our human family, but it has me wanting to share a concept that I wrote about in my Pop Propaganda and Illustrated Guide book, which features 37 tools, tricks, and techniques the social engineers use to attempt to control, divide, and enslave us. And it is called scapegoating. So let's read about the scapegoat. And this is going to come up more and more today. So scapegoating is in Pop Propaganda features these awesome illustrations. I'm obviously in no way, shape, or form impartial when it comes to judging my illustrations. Scapegoating is the act of blaming a person or group for something terrible they had nothing to do with, and then mistreating them as punishment for the act they didn't even commit. Minority groups are historically used as scapegoats. The strategy accomplishes two things. It allows the perpetrators to evade responsibility for the atrocity in question, and it divides the populace. So, as I said, this is probably going to be a theme today. Yes, it is going to be a theme today. This is the problem with conflating Zionism with Judaism. It's part of the reason why the ADL is so gross and is such an anti-Semitic organization, because it's all this like giant snow job, right? Now, all of a sudden, because they've once again changed another definition. So, if we criticize the US's relationship with Israel and are the guardrails they put about Israel criticism within our own country, where we allegedly have freedom of speech and expression, although it's obviously taken about 9 trillion hits these past however many years. But they do this on purpose as a means of squelching critical discourse and intellectual exploration. So I'm also bringing this up because I got an email just this morning from some rando on Twitter saying, "Don't you think the Jews are just as bad as the radical left or the radical right?" And I'm like, "Are you trolling me? Are you serious? Like, how would it go down if I said, if I just emailed some random person, don't you think it's the blacks are just as bad as the radical right or the radical left?" Like, That's the type of thing that would get me canceled, that would probably get me thrown off Twitter entirely. But like, it's totally okay to say that about the Jews. And again, like I said, I'm always going to defer to freedom of speech. Everyone has the right to be a bigot, to say stupid, hateful stuff, and I think that the right to say stupid, hateful stuff is far more important than protecting any groups or classes. But it is bigotry, it is damaging, it is stupid. It just indicates like how stupid you are if you're reaching out to me, Danny Katz, and asking me to get on board with your Jew-hating bigotry. And the weirdest thing is like, I don't think this person was trolling me. I think she was like thinking I was gonna be like, yeah, the Jews suck. Like, even if I wasn't a Jew, I'm still not gonna jump on top of that kind of bigotry. It's just freaking stupid. Let's stop doing it. Like, Jay-Z and Beyonce are in the Illuminati. How is it gonna work if I say, the blacks are running the world? The blacks are the ones who are destroying the world. Like, I don't think that that would be all that well received, like on progressive radio network. It just wouldn't fly. But everyone gets a pass with the Jews, and we don't see how that's by design, this divide and conquer hatred. So I'm just inviting us to be a little bit more mindful and a little bit more exacting. Zionists, yeah, they have a gross agenda that has nothing to do with the Jewish people, with caring about the Jewish people, with caring about Jewish religion or ideals, which I really don't know much about, PS. It's different. I just want us to understand that it's different. All right. We're gonna move on to a series of exchanges I had on Facebook with a very prominent and well-respected journalist. And the reason that I'm sharing this is because it boggles my mind how people are buying in to like such insane misinformation about our world, especially when the misinformation is so completely out of whack with like the truth of our lived experiences. And so while I've given up on, I would say, most of the people who are still confused and still buying into the legacy narratives, and I'm just envisioning like the inside of their brains, like a big bowl of oatmeal, so they no longer have access to like critical thinking faculties. But I get stuck when it's journalists, and I get stuck when it's journalists who I've worked with and who've helped shape my career. And there's this like ridiculous, delusional, idealistic aspect of me that's like, if I could just get this journalist to see the truth and to understand where they're misguided, it would create a domino effect of him being able to influence his journalism students, because he does teach journalism, his readers, the people left in our community who think I'm a conspiracy theorist, radicalized nut job, wacko pants, and like just start to wake up to this. I'm gonna do a screen share and we're gonna walk through it. Also, because I see this type of like scripted gaslighting so often, and the fact that it passes for like intelligent discourse annoys me. So I just want to dispel it. So I saw this post on Facebook by one of my former editors, very, very prominent, well-published journalist. And I saw this post. I'm just going to read it aloud for those listening with our ears. One, best economy in decades. All right. Two, no American troops at war for first time in 24 years. That's actually not true. Three, murders way down. Also not true. Four, illegal border crossings below Trump admin. I'm just gonna give you the whole lay of the land. Four, jobs up, wages up, inflation down, unemployment and productivity near historic lows. I mean, I guess productivity would be near a historic low. Manufacturing jobs highest in decades. Six, drug ODs lowest in years. I don't know how that would be possible with fentanyl, and I'm not gonna bore you guys with me like going and looking for alternate statistics because we're gonna get into the statistic trap as I go through this whole exchange. But so I saw this post and I was just gobsmacked. I'm like, I could see this being posted by like, a boomer who doesn't understand journalism on any level and just like listens to CNN and just like parrots their indoctrination and thinks they like have a purpose by posting something stupid like this. But I was shocked seeing this from one of my former editors because I was like, I don't, is this a joke? Like, are you kidding? The best economy in decades? So let's move away from statistics. Anyone who's listening to me right now, are you experiencing the economy under the Biden administration as the best economy in decades? I'm just going to leave that to you. Certainly not in my experience. No American troops at war for the first time in 24 years. So we know that there are actually members of our military who have been sent to serve in these wars that didn't exist under the previous administration. I also want to be clear, and this will come up as we move through these exchanges. I didn't vote for Trump. I'm not actually like thinking that this Trump administration is the panacea for everything. I remain neutral. But again, we can see the Trump derangement syndrome informing this post. The revisionist history, the revisionist now, present moment history is astounding. Keep in mind, we are funding these wars. Okay, murders way down. I don't know where that is. Illegal border crossings below Trump admin. I mean, well, I'll take you through the post, but this was the post that I saw where I was like, normally I see stuff on Facebook, I don't weigh in. It's like I have better things to do with my time than fight with people on the internet. But again, I know this person's, I know the impact and reach that he has, and he is a friend of mine, and it's like I keep looking for the cracks in the TDS. I keep looking, there's gotta be a way for us to like unhook the insanity and stupidity that seems to be tacked on to the Trump derangement syndrome. And so I engage. So this was his post. And then we go into my response. So I responded, I'm still trying to wrap my mind around your take on our country and wondering how our perspectives can be so divergent. You do realize illegal border crossings are down because the Biden administration opened the borders to rapists, pedophiles, and child traffickers without recourse, right? And that we are now funding two wars. So I was trying to tread lightly, but I'm also like, to me, in my mind, his post is so incredibly outlandish and wrong. I'm just like trying to define the cracks and the ways in to have like an intelligent conversation about it. In the past, I've been just kicked off of his posts and have my perspectives deleted. So I do give him props that I'm allowed to weigh in, allowed that he's leaving my posts up. So he says, these are right-wing propaganda talking points, Danny, that don't have any basis in fact or the world outside a certain media ecosystem that doesn't follow basic tenets of journalism. Let's just stop right there because the gaslighting is insane. Like, I feel like this is, if I had my own dictionary, I would take this exchange and I would use it as the like primo perfect A number one example of gaslighting. So Apparently, according to this person's understanding of reality, it's not true that the Biden administration opened the border. Again, I'm not going to waste our time going back to give you guys the supporting information here. There's a ton of it. And if you want any pointers, actually don't reach out to me. If you don't know this by now, I don't know what to say, but I'm not going to be your private, your free on-call journalist. I just want us to understand the gaslighting and the propaganda. So, right-wing propaganda talking points. So notice I didn't say anything about left-right politics. I'm not a registered Republican. I don't identify as right-wing or Republican, but this is how good the propaganda campaign is. This is how successful it's been. And I've had this whenever I attempt to have a sane, intellectually honest conversation with someone who's running the kind of legacy media propaganda narratives. I want to take it out of the left-right paradigm because that's part of the problem. But those are right-wing talking points. If anyone saw my interview with Mark Gaffney, these are Kremlin talking points. It's like instead of talking about the ideas themselves, they go to their like higher level propaganda, like trash talking of said ideas. So we're not talking about the ideas themselves, but the ideas are going to be thrown away because they've been labeled, mislabeled right wing propaganda talking points. Let's refer back to our propaganda guide. Let's read about the red herring. The red herring is a distraction tactic wherein the cultural engineer or the minion doing her dirty work for her, in this case being the journalist, would be the minion, presents information that has all of nothing to do with the topic at hand to steer the conversation away from what is actually relevant. Oftentimes, the red herring constitutes a leap of illogic, as in a person stating, bananas are racist. To which the social engineer responds, bananas have potassium. We all know potassium is an equal opportunity mineral. Potassium couldn't possibly be racist. Now, borium, on the other hand, borium has always been insensitive to issues of gender equality. In my new blue spiel, I plan to eradicate this outdated myth of gender altogether and relocate the species to Mars. All right, it's a little bit ridiculous, but I mean, this whole global apocalypse is ridiculous. But again, instead of talking about the idea that the reason illegal immigration is down is because now crossing the border illegally isn't a crime, is not illegal, he goes to, those are right-wing talking points, Danny. Okay. Does that mean we can't talk about those talking points? Does that mean that those talking points have zero relevance? Like, are we supposed to be buying into the notion that, like, let's say they were, and I don't even know which will, I'll pull it up in a second, but like, the problem with this right-wing, left-wing divide is like, let's say that they are right-wing talking points. Does that mean they're wrong? Is everything that comes out of the right wing and the Republicans 1000% false? And everything that comes out of the left and the Democrat Party 1000% true? Like, is this the kind of binary, made up, divisive, polarized world in which we're allegedly living? Like, I've heard this so many times, and I'm so tired of it, which is why we're unpacking it here so that I can just let it go. All right. These are right-wing propaganda talking points, Danny. So we're not funding two wars. That's also right-wing propaganda. That's not happening. We're not sending billions and billions of dollars to Ukraine and to Israel in addition to like weapons. Like none of that is happening. Okay. Okay. You are almost quoting Marjorie Taylor Greene verbatim. Okay, so again, we can't talk about my facts, But we're saying why my facts aren't worth talking about because Marjorie Taylor Greene said them. Again, is everything out of Marjorie Taylor Greene's mouth supposed to be fallacious because she's not on the same team as the person writing this post? I'm not for open borders, but the propaganda you are parroting is old, tiresome, and untrue. I don't get it. So, A, this is the second time he's sloughed off my perspective as propaganda. Fair enough, because I think his perspective is propaganda. It's probably a great way in which the word has been weaponized. So, I guess it's not true, according to this person, that the Biden administration opened our border. Okay, I mean, I remember when I couldn't travel or go into certain places without COVID tests, but I know that certain plenty of like thousands, millions were allowed to cross the border without those COVID tests. Okay. This is just speaking to what a great job our fake legacy media has done in mind controlling the public, especially journalists. That's where I get so annoyed. Like, that's the hook for me. The percentage of illegal immigrants in the country is about 3%, about the same as it's been for decades. What? What? For realsies? I believe we've had millions and millions of people come in. But again, I'm not here to refute these things. I'm just here to give us an overview, of how toxic the landscape has become. There hasn't been an illegal immigrant crime wave, even though horrible crimes, of course, are committed by people. Has anyone heard about the Venezuelan gangs who are taking entire neighborhoods hostage? This is happening in Albuquerque here in New Mexico. Do we see what's happening? Like, I'm sure we've all seen the videos of like these people riding a bike with a mask into a Walgreens or a Gucci and just like taking handfuls of shit and people not doing anything. All right, okay. Most crimes of all varieties are committed by US citizens and current cabinet picks. For reals though, immigrants, legal and otherwise, commit crimes at lesser rates than citizens. Interesting that he says immigrants commit crimes at lesser rates than citizens, because unless you were born here, like you're native or you're a Spanish conqueror, like we're all immigrants. So I don't know. He's making this an immigrant thing that it's like he's taking a point of view that I don't think is speaking to what I'm speaking to, but okay. I'm not pro illegal immigration or open borders, but it is what it is. And then he posts a link to a undocumented immigrant offending rate lower than US born citizen rate put out by our own government. So again, like he's discounting my perspective, which according to him is just right-wing propaganda, by giving me a link to a government survey. Okay. So then I respond to his government link. I'm both sad and disappointed to hear you run. This is my response. I'm both sad and disappointed to hear you run the exact same old gaslighting script as every other confused ideologue buying the legacy media propaganda. I have no idea whether they are right-wing talking points as I don't consume right-wing media. But as a journalist who does her own research, I can assure you that they are facts. Have you looked into them beyond simple government-issued nonsense? You do understand the implications of Obama's Smith-Munt Modernization Act, don't you? Don't you? Please tell me you're grokking this. It's kind of sort of everything. And I don't know what kind of bubble you're living in, but New Mexico has been ravaged by crime during the administration, notably so. This is just my experience living here, as everyone in New Mexico, I'm sure, can attest to. Now, the reason why I bring up the Smith-Munt Modernization Act, which was passed by Obama at the end of 2012 and shoved into like a different bill, the way they always kind of sneak in the most egregious of civil rights decimating acts, they always hide the grossest things, which we'll also get into as we go through this thread, in these bigger bills, which is why Thomas Massie, God bless him, said we need to just go through these acts one by one instead of having this big bunch of like 1,000 of them that either get approved all in one big swath or don't, right? It's just another scam being pulled on the public by the civil servants who work for us. So the Smith Modernization Act, I'm going to stop the screen share, made it legal for the American government, for our intelligence agencies to propagandize its own people. Why would Obama do this? What would the thought process be? What would the rationale be for taking? So the Smith-Mundt Act had been around since, I believe, the 30s, which protected the American people from propaganda by its own government. So I'm curious to know, which I haven't found, and I definitely have researched it. Like, why would a sitting president decide, hey, it's a good idea to change that age-old Smith-Mundt Act and let's modernize it by, in fact, making it legal to propagandize our own people? Explain to me how that move serves the benefit of the American people. I'm not seeing it. Now, the very next year, the Obamas were given a multi-million dollar production deal with Netflix, and I believe it was his Secretary of State, Susan Rice, was given a seat on the board of Netflix. So I'm not making any hard and fast conclusions, but Occam's razor, just looking at all the pieces, it certainly seems like Netflix has been set up as a government propaganda outlet. And the only reason I could see that it would serve the American government to propagandize its own people is if they wanted to do things that weren't in their people's best interest, so they needed to manipulate them to get on board with it. Why is this important? And why is this important in terms of this conversation? What I was trying to do in staying in this exchange was figure out where is the breakdown between our worldviews. And where can we heal this divide and start to understand one another's perspectives a little bit more? Now, I realize I was the only one in this exchange who was trying to foster greater understanding and unity. That was not a two-way street. But when my journalist friend, who I won't even give you guys the history, but it is astounding to me how he thinks that doing research is just looking up an article that the government puts out. And it is crazy to me how many journalists who I thought knew better are basically just recycling government-issued, CIA-approved press releases and calling it news and calling it reporting and getting a big paycheck and calling it a day. So the reason why I brought it up in this part of our exchange is I keep like biting my tongue from using this person's name, is you're sending me a government-issued report to refute my perspective. But do you understand that the government is now openly propagandizing its own people? So can you see how sending me a government-issued statement on this fact is not necessarily a reflection of truth in light of the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act, which is giving the government permission to propagandize us, right? So it's very relevant to this exchange. Like, your rationale is this government statement, but our government is willingly and knowingly and admittingly propagandizing us. Okay, so that was the point of me bringing it up. Again, just trying to have honest intellectual discourse. So going back to our screen share. All right, so that was post number three. And then he posts, okay. So his refutation. To my post about the New Mexico increase in crime, which is off the charts. It's freaky deaky here. Of course, Albuquerque, which is voted the least safe, the most violent city in the. No, that's not true. Well, we'll get to the statistics in a second, but Albuquerque, the crime rate has gone off the charts. The amount of car break-ins here in New Mexico, in Santa Fe, where homelessness has skyrocketed, house break-ins, we have a serial killer, murders, shootings. It's off the charts and everyone knows it and everyone's talking about it. But his response to me saying, I don't know what kind of bubble you're living in. He lives in Southern California, but New Mexico has been ravaged by crime during the administration, notably so. He sends me a link to an LA Daily Post. So, LA, it's not Los Angeles, it's Los Alamos. An LA Daily Post article, and this is a tiny, tiny, tiny paper owned by one woman, saying FBI releases data showing New Mexico crime declines as strong policies take effect. Okay, so basically what he's doing, he's not hearing me saying, I don't know about your bubble, but New Mexico has been ravaged by crime. He's not saying, oh, I'm not in New Mexico, Danny. Tell me about it. Help me understand what's going on there, which seems to be different from this idea that violent crime has plummeted as per my legacy media propaganda. Instead of wanting to understand, he immediately sends me something telling me that I'm wrong, right? And this is something that I write about in The Language of Betterarchy, and we have talked about it before, and repetition is how we learn things. So I'm going to go through it again. As I write about in the conflict section, this is the strategy called proving we are right versus seeking to understand. Now, this whole book is about evolving our culture from hierarchy, outdated, anti-life, into what I'm calling betterarchy. So proving we are right is a hierarchical strategy of communication. Seeking to understand is the betterarchical upgrade. So we're doing completely different things in this conversation. I'm trying to understand where he's coming from and find the breakdown of our perspectives, and he's trying to show me why he's right and I'm wrong. So I want to give us a bit of a deeper understanding on this outdated strategy. Here we go. The proliferation of conflict languaging has turned discourse into a battlefield wherein we are programmed to blindly defend our ideas and our indoctrination instead of pausing to consider that we might not know every single thing there is to know about every single thing, and that perhaps, just perhaps, the other perspective might be valid, relevant, or true. You know what? I'm reading this and I'm realizing I literally just read this like two shows ago. I'm not going to read it again. I'm going to defer to, I just recorded this a couple shows ago. And as you're curious, you can nab a copy of The Language of Betterarchy. And it's such an egoic strategy. It's so anathema to fostering understanding, cooperation, unity consciousness. I spoke about this on a podcast that I did last night, which was really weird because I was invited on this podcast. They asked me for like a ton of information, website, books. They wanted talking points. They wanted all this information. And then we ended up doing like a pre-show call, and he's asking me what questions he should ask me about my work. And I'm like, you're the one who invited me on your show, and I know you've read my book. Like, why have a podcast if you are not excited about having an authentic conversation with your guests and asking them the questions that you want answers to? It's so weird to me, but also not weird as I understand how like mediocrity is like winning the game, has been winning the game and winning the podcast game. And you have people like Danny Jones and Lex Fridman who like have the personality of an eraser, and have these like big giant popular podcasts. And this guy has a big giant popular podcast. And I'm like, why am I doing your job for you? How about you ask me what you authentically want to know? It's so weird. That does it for the first half of today's solo podcast. As you are inspired to pick up the second half, you can find that over on both my Locals and Patreon pages. Those addresses are dannykatz.locals.com and patreon.com/dannykatz. At both platforms, for as little as $5 a month, you get access to all of my second half conversations, plus oodles of bonus content, plus the knowledge that you are supporting me in keeping on, keeping on. Really, truly, your support means the world. It allows me to continue doing these podcasts. So your generous patronage is very much appreciated. Also reminding you to sign up for my newsletter at dannykatz.com. And that does it. Thank you so much for sharing your sacred attention with me. Thank you for remembering that every word matters, that you are omniscopic amazingness. I will see you over on the Locals and the Patreon. Have a rockin' day.